Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It's history, very dark history, it's history. Our history, very, 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 very dark history.
We spend our whole life learning our history and stuff.
It's history.
Finding the truth abounding with mensches and schmucks.
It's history. Research is our true desire. Go down the rabbit hole. Give knowledge to inspire, discussing comic gold. Learn about facts on our podcast, sharing history is our goal. Have a few laughs with our podcast, infotainment for your soul. Skip to the past on our podcast, talking about the rabbit hole. Musical History Podcast. Knowing the truth will make you whole.
Here we are, another episode of Talking Musical History, our podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Kevin.
It's good to have you guys back. I'm really excited to talk about one of my favorite, producers, directors, writers.
Creative geniuses.
Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks. I don't know about most of you people out there, but I have always been a big fan of like Monty Python and Dr. Demento. Because like he has always been one of my filmmaking favorites. Through time, the more that I learn about him, the more that I realize that he is just like really good at his craft.
He was born Melvin Kaminsky, but goes by Mel Brooks. I could not imagine the world without the producers.
Yeah, you tell me about it. Well, I mean, not just the producers, right? It's responsible for so many things, like Young Frankenstein, also on Broadway, right?
Yes, it was on Broadway.
I mean, like, I think it's terrific. Yeah, and you know, Mel, like, did like stuff before that, before even like on Broadway. Like,
musical theater writer Ken Mandelbaum.
Ooh, Ken Mandelbaum, that's a great name.
Said that Mel Brooks writing the book for the 1962 show All-American with Lee Adams and Charles Strauss, who were also famous for Bye Bye Birdie.
We love you, Conrad. Oh, yes, we do.
We
love,
love
you, Conrad. Are we true? When we're not near us, we're blue. Oh, Conrad, we love you.
We may talk about Bye Bye Birdie. And
No, we'll definitely talk about Bye Bye Birdie. I was just making fun of the
Bye Bye Bloody.
Bye Bye Bloody Birdie.
Bye Bye Bloody Birdie.
Bye Bye Bloody Birdie. We really hate you.
Based on the Robert Louis Taylor's novel Professor Fedorsky in 1950, the Broadway production is set in a world where science and sports collide in this colossal flop with unfavorable reviews and only 80 performances at the historic Winter Garden Theater.
Wait. So All American was a flop?
Doesn't stop there.
Oh, no, it doesn't stop there.
Starring Ray Bolger, better known for 1939 Wizard of Oz, is the Scarecrow who had not been in front of audiences in decades.
Oh.
With Faded Glory, Max is basically Ray.
He's not, though.
He's not.
You know who Max Bialystock actually is, right?
Right. So I think he's a combination of Ray Bolger at this time. He used to be the king of all Broadway.
Is that who Mel Brooks used to work for?
No, because there's someone else that comes into the picture that actually used to have little ladies come by.
Yeah, that's Max Bialystock. Like he said in interviews.
No, that's what I'm saying. From before I did the watching of the video that talks about Mel Brooks saying where Max Bialystock basically came from, going from the All-American being a flop.
No, I mean, there's probably truth to that, but I mean, like when he was 16, he lived through that too, right?
Right.
I mean, he worked for a producer that literally stooped 80-year-olds, octogenarians, right? Stooped octogenarians and had them write checks out to cash. And I would assume that guy did terrible shows. Like, if I tried to find his name, I couldn't. So when Mel Brooks was 16, he worked for a producer.
But we don't know the name of that producer.
That is correct.
I didn't know it either. I looked and I didn't find it.
Pretty interesting. Because I was trying to like look back at like some of his, because, you know, we know that he worked for Get Smart. We know that he worked with Carl Reiner, worked with all these like greats from the past. But it like there's seems to be very little on like what his teenage years were like. Probably need to pick up his memoir. See if we can find out who that producer. We gotta find out who that producer
right,
is.
Right, because I'm sure it's probably in Mel Brooks's like biography. I mean, we could be wrong. We have not read such a book yet. We may be inclined to read such a book now that we've piqued our own interest.
Yeah, no, definitely. It seems pretty interesting because I never thought that Max Bialystock would be so specifically modeled after a real person, and he definitely was.
I kind of had that thought, but I wasn't like sure because it just, he seemed, I mean, Zero is larger than life, and his role was written basically for Zero.
But specifically, Mel Brooks has said that, like, because he picked him as the actor because of the way he could portray his memory of his old producer.
Yeah.
Specifically. So, I mean, like, that's saying something. I mean, yeah, like, obviously he had the acting style and the chops that would be able to pull it off. But at the same time, there's also a little bit of truth in there, yeah. which really makes Gene Wilder even that much more cooler because he basically, like, created this thing out of nowhere and never intended to be a comedian.
Right. And he was the reason that Zero Mostel even did it.
Really?
Yeah. At first, Zero did not want to follow up the Tevye. He didn't want to do it at first. You know, because it was like, you know, I don't want to do a play about Hitler. They got Gene Wilder to do it. And they said, okay, you have to read your part. Zero won't do it. Read for him. And they fell, like, instantly in love when Gene Wilder read the part of Leo Blum. And then he agreed to do it.
He presented the script to Sidney Glaser, and Sidney was eating a tuna fish sandwich, and he was talking about how he got tuna fish everywhere, laughing so hard from his read of the script. I mean, like, the producers is funny. It's just funny.
Peter Sellers, you know, comic royalty.
Yeah, definitely.
He saved, gave, and granted life to the producers.
How do you do that?
Well, he was originally going to be Leo Blum. That was the original thought that they had.
That would have been interesting.
It would have.
I wonder how that would have looked.
It wouldn't have been the same.
Definitely not the same as Gene Wilder.
I'm glad. Because what happened is that they sent it to him.
Conversely, What would the Pink Panther be like if Gene Wilder?
With Gene Wilder. Alternate universes.
I know, right?
There's no way for us that happened to now.
Doctor Strange in the multiverse.
They sent the script over to Peter Sellers. He didn't get it, apparently. There's a mix-up somewhere in the communication. He didn't get it. And then there's this, like, movie night that he had where a bunch of people came over. They got stoned and, you know, watched movies and had food. And it was great. You know, a good little time. And, yeah. You know.
And this was much harder back then. This is not back in the day of streaming. So.
Right.
It's kind of a to-do to be able to show films in your home.
This is a rich person.
Yes.
Very, very well off people. There was a mix up in the tape of like the film, and they just happened to have the producers before it was supposed to be shown, I guess.
Okay.
And because, you know, Peter Sellers, he has the connections.
Like that's not something that easily can happen on accident, but
right. And they stumbled. They're like the producers. Okay, let's watch this. The one film didn't get ordered correctly or something like that. And so then they stumbled into the producers, and Peter Sellers took out a full page ad in, you know, newspaper saying how great the producers was, and it was a stroke of genius and everything like that. And it ran for a year.
Oh, wow.
Because of Peter Sellers. Zero Mostel. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, his performance in the original producers.
Brilliant.
Like, it's really kind of funny because I hadn't seen the 1968 version in a really long time. And, like, so we watched it together recently. Yeah. I had seen, obviously, the musical version, like, a bunch since then. And, like, the performance, I forget, like, especially Gene Wilder's performance, but Zero's performance, they're both good at their craft. Like, these guys, like, I mean, like, Gene Wilder had just done what we were talking about, Death of a Salesman on TV. Like, serious actor.
And Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde and Death of a Salesman.
Bonnie and Clyde, yeah. Serious actor. Producers. I mean, like, thank goodness for Mel Brooks for, like, giving us the comic genius of Gene Wilder. Thank goodness.
The world would not be as bright without the light of Gene Wilder. All the Richard Pryor movies that he was in with.
Yeah, there's Silver Streak. There's, what, Stir Crazy. There's Hear No Evil, See No Evil. Oh, right, Gene Wilder has created a great body of comic. Lady in Red.
Okay.
Right? Because it didn't actually have the song Lady in Red, which was really weird because it came out around there. There must have been something that happened around that. But anyway, we're not here talking about Gene Wilder's Lady in Red. We're here to talk about the incomparable Mel Brooks. Egotarians? Can you say that?
Egotarians? Yeah, sure.
I mean, I'm gonna start coining phrases. I mean, that's why I'm here, just coining phrases left and right.
Mel Brooks, the great egotarian.
I was like, wait, do you mean egotarian? No, because he has an Emmy, a Grammy, a Tony, and an Oscar. Dude is brilliant. You know, I am super jealous of the man's life because at the early age of 8, you know, like in Mel Brooks, he was a huge fan of like Buster Keaton films and Charlie Chaplin films. And like, what a time to be alive in like New York as a Jew, like growing up with like Neil Simon and Carl Reiner and like all these like greats, like so that you can like hone your craft and become amazing. His uncle, he takes him in his taxi to see at the Alvin Theater the opening of Cole Porter's like Anything Goes. Opening weekend, Anything Goes, right? With Ethel Merman.
Anything goes.
Ethel Merman on stage, like, of course Mel Brooks turned out the way he did. Of course he did. Like, if he hadn't, society would have been truly broken, right? It is broken for so many, but, like, if you can't get lightning out of that, then, like, there's something wrong with the world.
Anything Goes is classic and amazing, and so is Ethel Merman.
Exactly. And then, like just growing around, like, all those great films of the time, like, silent films, like you can see it in his work, too. You know, like that Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton style.
Silent movie.
Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, this experience, like I said, like, it was a huge part, I would assume, of, like, getting him out of what he thought was his destined career to be a cutter in the garment sector.
Oy vey.
Or Oygevolt. One of my favorite stories that he tells is, like, the first time that he actually got to act. In his teenage years, you know, when he's about, like, 15 years old, whatnot, was living in the same neighborhood as Don Appel, who's an actor on Broadway, right? And so Don Appel brought young Mel Brooks to the Butler Lodge. He was hired to be a rowboat tender, a busboy, and a utility actor, or basically a stand-in, right? I think one of the best ways he tells it is his interview on Jibba Jabba with Conan O'Brien, so definitely check that out. Okay, so Mel Brooks is working on Thomas Jobs' play Uncle Harry, and this is before it went on Broadway. So Burt Reed is the actor who is playing the lawyer. He falls in a hole, and then they're like, well, you know, Mel's the understudy, he's the utility actor, we should probably utilize him, right? They do all these things to, like, you know, try to make him look as old as possible, and it's great. He sounds convincing backstage. It's terrific. They put him out on stage. He gets out on stage. He sees all those people.
Got a little stage fright.
And, like, silence, and he, like, walks to center stage and, like, takes off the wig, and he's like, it's my first time on stage! And, like, everybody busts out laughing, and he's just like, oh, I could probably do this, right? And then, like, the director is just, like, furious because he's like, I'm trying to get on Broadway here. It's really cool to be in the right place at the right time. And also, like, sometimes you just got to milk your moment in and have fun.
Him and Carl Reiner created the comic character, the 2,000-year-old man.
Yeah, 2,000-year-old man. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Buck Henry, you know, and Get Smart. I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, the first movie I saw of him probably had to have been Spaceballs.
Oh, the first movie you saw Mel Brooks is Spaceballs?
Yeah.
That's a good movie to start off with, you know? We've been jammed. Like with the raspberry? Was it a raspberry jam? I don't know. I don't remember.
Robin Hood, Men in Tights. That was...
Yeah, yeah. We're men
in tights.
We're men in tights.
Tights.
We roam around the forest looking for fights.
And Blazing Saddles was genius, and History of the World. And we stumbled upon a movie in our research.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That we will definitely talk more about in our second part of The Producers.
Yep, yep, yep. To Be or Not to Be.
That is the movie we are going to talk about.
To Be or Not to Be. Actually, it's really interesting, the story around, like, To Be or Not to Be and The Producers.
Spoiler alert, both have Nazis.
They both have Nazis. Who knew?
It's The Producers part 1.5.
I know. It's like he's just, like, really working on the iteration of The Producers, like, pretty much every time.
I mean, and plus with Anne Bancroft.
Yeah, she's terrific in this. I am a strong believer in true love.
The sweethearts of Mel and Anne.
Mel Brooks, you know, pursued his true love, Anna Maria Luisa Italiano, known to us as Anne Bancroft, star of To Be or Not to Be and The Graduate. And, you know, he was initially married before that to Florence Baum. Sorry, Flo. But, like, it wasn't really meant to be with her, obviously. But Anne and Mel together was the universe basically writing itself, and grew together and until, you know, Anne passed in 2005, 1961, at a taping of Perry Como TV special. Anne was preparing for the show, and Mel Brooks, drawn to the sweet sound of her voice, journeyed to listen to her rehearse. He was drawn into her beautiful eyes and sweet voice, and knew it was kismet, luck manifested.
So Mel was in love and still was in love with Anne Bancroft. You can literally hear it when he talks about it. At the end of the Destined 1961 rehearsal, he yells out, "Anne Bancroft, I love you." And she yells back, "Who are you?" He yells back at her, "I'm Mel Brooks." And she yells back at him, "I have your record." Every night, after the first meeting, Mel tries to be where Anne is. He would accidentally, quotes again, show up and run into her, right? Don't worry, kids. Back then, this was called courting. It wasn't like any sort of like a stalking or anything like that. And anyway, she definitely wanted him around. Obviously, they stayed married until she passed. You know. That being said, no means no. You know, don't be following people, folks. You know, like no means no. So, if your flirtations are rejected, don't be Steve Urkel, be a Stefan Urkel. Anne knew it was love too, and they were married in 1964, 3 years later, and stayed together until Bancroft passed. Seriously, if someone wants to make a movie about this, like the story of Anne and Mel, I think that would be an amazing thing. One of her quotes made me giggle. She said, "I'd never had so much pleasure with a human being, so I think you have to marry for the right reasons and marry the right person." Perfect love story. Like, you want, if you want to promote love, there it is right there.
The love of Mel and Anne, marriage with pleasure.
First, when Mel had the idea, he thought maybe he would make it a book, but he thought,
"Springtime for Hitler."
But the dialogue was obviously too heavy. Then he thought it might make it into a play, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, the show is all over the place, right? Like, I mean, like, as a modern musical, it definitely works because you have all the new technology that makes it easier to move things in and out. Bialystock's office, you have the opening night scene, you have the fountain scene.
Lincoln Center.
Yeah, moving to the producer's big number, like, "I want to be a producer," and then before that, the unhappy, like, in the
White Hall and Marks.
Like, there's like, just that show is like constantly moving from scene to scene, and that's basically how the producers became a movie for a guy who never made a film in his life.
Turning a movie that had a little singing into a full-on musical to movie musical.
Oh.
So it all started, Harvey Weinstein.
I mean, you know.
Very dark history.
It's true, but he's not Hitler.
There's a big difference between Harvey Weinstein and Hitler.
Though I have to say, to the people that he's terrorized, probably not that much of a difference. And, you know, that's not to belittle, like, any of the sort of grief that Harvey Weinstein has caused. But, like, you know, there were no concentration camps, so that's a positive, right?
Weinstein approached Brooks to make it into a musical in 2001.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
By 2005, he'd changed his mind.
Being in the theater for that musical, I think, probably was something amazing. Live reaction to that, which, you know, you would never get from the original movie. But, I mean, the original movie is terrific, and, like, that...
Yeah.
Is what allowed all of this to happen.
Gene Wilder, in the scene where, like, freaks out about the blue blanket.
"I'm wet and I'm in pain."
He was thinking that Zero Mostel grabbed his dog for the motivation for how he acted with his blue blanket.
Alfred Hitchcock. Mel Brooks wrote High Anxiety with Alfred Hitchcock. Mel goes to Alfred and he's like, "Hey, you know, I'm writing this this movie about, you know, like, kind of like the stuff you do and whatnot, you know, like, as an homage to your filmmaking." And he, like, Hitchcock, like, looks at the script and he's like, "Hey, you know, this is what I want you to do. I want you to come back to my home every Friday around noon and we're going to work on this script, all right?" And, like, that's incredible, right? He makes the movie and he does a screening for Hitchcock. He's sitting in the movie theater with Alfred Hitchcock and they watch the movie, you know, and
he's like watching Hitchcock. Does he like it? Does he not like it? I don't know what's going on. The film ends. Hitchcock stands up. He walks by him. Doesn't say a word. Doesn't say a word to him. Walks by. Mel's like, what? Did I do something wrong? Is it awful? Did he not like it? Did I offend him? Like, what's wrong? What's wrong with the film, right?
What's wrong with Hitchcock? What's wrong with my movie? Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. So Mel was filled with worry. Did he like it? Did he not like it? Was he embarrassed? It was dedicated to the master of suspense, the great Alfred Hitchcock. The next day, Mel gets a wooden case. Chateaubriand, 1961, six bottles with the note. No need to have any anxiety. It's a wonderful film. Love, Hitch.
Now you're blessed with success.
The master of suspense does it again, right? He made him wait for it. And you'll have to wait for more TMH after this message.
In addition to Mel Brooks, the other linchpin in this movie being made.
Who are we talking about?
Zero Mostel, born in 1915 as Samuel Joel Mostel, but went by Zero, partially because when he was a child, his mother was afraid he wouldn't amount to anything.
Oh, that's mean.
Zero. You'll amount to zero.
That's a rough mother.
So we turn that scarred past into his star future.
Oh, look at that.
And he went on to make American history, American musical theater history, American Jewish history, American history.
I mean, he's a comic legend.
He was blacklisted for a while, unfortunately. He had to testify, and we'll get into that later.
A funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
Which he originated the role.
Yeah, definitely. Like Waiting for Godot.
Which he originated the role.
I know, he did that a lot.
And Tevye. If I were a rich man. And we will definitely talk about Fiddler on the Roof at a later point in time.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Both Nathan Lane and Zero Mostel won for Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum as Pseudolus, the slave. Both won the Tony for that role. Zero won it in 63, and of course Nathan Lane won it in 96. They both played Max Bialystock, and they were both in Waiting for Godot as Estragon. There's some ties and some history.
Yeah, it's like easy linkings.
Yeah. Zero Mostel actually was hit by a bus. That happened in 1960.
So it gave him probably health problems, huh, for the last few years of his, like, last couple, like, decade and a half of his life.
And so each time he'd have to, you know, record, he'd have to be more sitting down at times because his leg would hurt him too much. And he actually died. He was the only person in Muppet history to record an episode of The Muppet Show and then die before the airing of the show.
This is truly sad, but I mean, like, you know, you get hit by a bus. Macabre Facts, brought to you by Talking Musical History Podcast.
September 8th, 1977. Mostel, another link from the last episode that we talked about, was the Rent episode, and Zero Mostel actually died in a very
similar way.
He was rehearsing The Merchant.
Oh, wow.
For Arnold Wesker.
Okay.
It was a Zero Mostel reimagining version of Shakespeare's character Shylock.
Oh, cool.
And so they're rehearsing this, and September 8th, 1977, Zero complains of dizziness and loss of consciousness, and then he just dies. It is believed that he suffered an aortic aneurysm. Wesker wrote about this in his book, The Birth of Shylock and the Death of Zero Mostel.
Yeah, yeah. Once again, that's the same way that Jonathan Larson passed. And like we were talking about how like sad it is because like it seems like potentially that they should have picked it up if they, you know, took the time to actually examine him instead of like sending him on his way. But that's, you know, we just have to do a better job of helping each other out.
There was a show that was called Ulysses from James Joyce's novel. And he actually played Leo Bloom.
Oh, wow. So was the character very similar?
Or? Mel Brooks actually always thought of Leo Bloom as a Jew with curly hair. So that's why.
A curly-headed redhead.
He brought in the great Gene Wilder. Otherwise known as Jerome Silberman, his birth name. So another Jewish gem who changed their name due to anti-Semitism once again. Yeah, Gene Wilder was born in 1933 in June 11th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But he lived a life of pure Hollywood glory. And he unfortunately died in 2016. From cancer.
Gene lived a really great life. I mean, like, all of a sudden he lives this life beyond stage. He's gonna be remembered.
I originated the role of iconic characters. Dr. Frankenstein.
Richard Pryor's right-hand man.
He was Jim, the Waco Kid in Blazing Saddles. Leo Bloom in The Producers.
Yeah, Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka.
Yeah, Willy Wonka, definitely.
If you want to view paradise, which we will talk about as well, we will definitely talk about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So we will definitely be revisiting Gene Wilder again for that in the future. Yeah, and his last performance was in 2003 as a guest on Will and Grace, for which he received an Emmy for Outstanding Guest Actor.
Ah, go on. That's pretty cool. Speaking of Gene Wilder, did I tell you the story of basically how Gene Wilder said no for Mel Brooks to act in Young Frankenstein?
No, you didn't. But it sounds like we should definitely talk about that in our Young Frankenstein podcast.
I think that's a great idea. Let's do that.
Yes. So yeah, in the future, look for Talking Musical History, Talk Young Frankenstein.
It'll happen. Not next podcast, but it'll happen.
It will be in the future.
Yeah, and Gene Wilder, he was super excited to have Gene Wilder a part of the show. Gene Wilder did not want to be in a comedy. He was a serious actor. Yes, a serious actor on Broadway. But seriously, the Gene Wilder that Gene thought he was before The Producers and what he became, after that is just like not the same human being. But like, thank goodness for Mel Brooks for telling Gene Wilder that he does comedy. Like at the Oscars, when he won an Oscar for The Producers, he thanked Zero Mostel, definitely. He should have thanked Gang Bancroft, but whatever. We're not going to talk about that. He always has jokes, but, you know, he was definitely much more vocal about his love for her after her death.
Maybe there was some feelings of, like, the original plan for the character that Kenneth Mars plays, Franz Lipkin, was Dustin Hoffman.
That would have been Dustin would have probably done a really good job with that. Probably scary job.
He got called for The Graduate.
Yeah, and Bancroft's film. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's like everything connects, right? It's all connected. So he's at the Oscars and he thanks Zero Mostel and he thanks Gene Wilder three times. It was a super short Oscar speech, but like he thanks Gene Wilder three times.
Well, Gene got Zero to do it, basically.
Yeah, and he helped, like, the two of them. Like, the film doesn't work without the two of them. Yeah.
That leads us to Broadway musical of
the Broadway? The Broadway, you mean?
Producers. Stepping into the role of Max Bialystock, which Bialystok is a place in Germany where there was a high concentration of Jews that unfortunately got murdered in the Holocaust. So that is partially, I think, why they name Max Bialystok. That's, you know, the names are very clever. Nathan Lane, coming fresh off of Guys and Dolls. He was fresh off of Nathan Detroit. And there was a lot of Nathan Detroit, I think, that was brought into that character of Max Bialystok. I've loved Nathan Lane.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't?
Ever since I saw him in Birdcage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's a terrific actor. Definitely a hard worker. I wish I would have seen him in Guys and Dolls. I think he would have been incredible.
Why is good old reliable Nathan?
Nathan plays Nathan.
Nathan. Nathan plays Nathan Detroit. All right, you can hear all about that in our other podcast talking about Guys and Dolls.
That's right. Please check that out. It was a lot of fun to make.
And Nathan Lane was another Aquarian born February 3rd in 1956. I always love those facts.
Yeah, no, I know. You love the Aquarian connection.
The Aquarian. Aquarius and queer, magically entwined together. Another Disney connection. Because of Kenneth Mars, who voiced King Triton in the Disney classic Little Mermaid, Nathan Lane voices Timon in Lion King.
But he won a daytime Emmy for that. Like he's been nominated a bunch of times for a primetime Emmy. Mm-hmm. He should have a primetime Emmy.
I thought he came out earlier. But he came out publicly in 1999 after the death of Matthew Shepard and has been a longtime board member of and fundraiser for Equity Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. He was honored with the Human Rights Campaign Equality Award, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Defamation League, Defamation Vito Russo Award.
I did not know any of this. He's a busy man.
The Trevor Project Hero Award. And the Matthew Shepard Foundation Making a Difference Award for his work in the LGBT community in 2015. On November 17th, 2015, he married his longtime partner, theater producer and writer, Devlin Elliott.
Aww. Devlin, that's so cute.
And they are still together as far as we know. Oh, that's because maybe I think he came out earlier because he was in The Birdcage and in Jeffrey. He was in Jeffrey before The Birdcage, in between Lion King and Jeffrey.
Yeah, I never saw Jeffrey, but I mean, like, directed by Christopher Ashley.
Paul Rudnick.
Yeah, who wrote it, yeah.
Steven Weber, Sir Patrick Stewart, Michael T. Weiss, Sigourney Weaver.
We should check that out.
Part of the gay classics.
Yeah.
He was also really amazing in The People versus O.J. Simpson. American Crime Story.
That's right. I completely forgot about that.
As F. Lee Bailey, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. He's a kid's been all over the place. All
right. And then we will move on to Matthew Broderick, who I will say, this is why I was confused in my musical theater brain.
What do you mean?
That I thought
Matthew Broderick was Tony Danza?
Matthew Broderick was in Torch Song Trilogy with Harvey Fierstein. And Harvey Fierstein was Tevye.
Ah, yeah, linkings.
Nathan Lane was never Tevye, although he's on people's dream list to be Tevye.
That's fair, yeah.
Fellow musical theater podcaster Zane C. Weber of Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know.
Right.
I talked with him about it, and I said, yeah, from what I hear, you really love Zero Mostel. And he said, I do, but I really love Nathan Lane.
Yeah, I really love Nathan Lane, too.
And part of that, I agree. I'm saying yes.
No, I mean, Zero originated the role in The Producers and like basically gave us like a lot of amazing roles.
The iconic.
Iconic.
Iconic roles.
You know.
Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, War Games.
The Brighton Beach Memoir.
Shall we play a game?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep. How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Biloxi Blues.
Another Neil Simon, yeah. When you do Brighton Beach memoirs, it'd be weird if he wasn't coming back for Biloxi Blues.
Godzilla. The Stepford Wives. Inspector Gadget. I love Matthew Broderick to death. Even with his semi-Nick Cage-style acting, right? Like, because, like, you know, Nick Cage has these, like, really, like, Oscar-worthy or, like, really, like, hyped, pumped films. And then there's other films you're like, what were you thinking, Nick? I remember seeing the movie The Freshman. And, like, I know no one's talking about the movie The Freshman, but I thought Matthew Broderick did an amazing job in that. And, like... in my eyes, he can do no wrong, even with Inspector Gadget.
Nice work if you can get it.
Right? And you can get it if you're Matthew Broderick.
No. That he's been married to Sarah Jessica Parker, Sex and the City herself, since 1997. He started acting apparently the year I was born. Awesome.
He started acting the year you were born. That's funny.
He didn't know about me, obviously. He still doesn't know about me.
Yeah, this was Max Dugan the first actual film that he did? But I always say War Games because War Games is such a good film. I think a lot of people could learn from War Games. The best way to win is to not play at all.
Oh, he was a voice in the Adventure Time.
Oh, really? He does Adventure Time too? That's fun.
Yeah, and Rick and Morty.
Well, yeah, of course, The Cat and Rick and Morty. Gosh, why would I not mention that? Yeah. Like, if you're not watching Rick and Morty... I'm sorry, but...
And BoJack Horseman.
Oh, yeah, BoJack Horseman as well. But, like, Matthew Broderick as a cat is like, why ask questions? he's... And also, he was in the Roseanne... The Connors. He was in The Connors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was... Like, that was a really great character arc.
And then are we moving on to Uma Thurman?
Oh, yeah. If you got it, flaunt it. If you got it,
flaunt it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Uma Thurman is such an incredible actress. Like, and I, you know, when I heard she was going to be in The Producers, I was like, I don't know, like, maybe. She's pretty cool. But she just, like, constantly surprises me with, like, how phenomenal of an actor she is. Like Gattaca.
Yeah.
Gattaca and Batman and Robin. Like, and then Kill Bill.
She was in Les Miserables, the non-musical version. And Truth About Cats and Dogs, which was fun.
Yeah, no, that was a fun film.
And then Poison Ivy in Batman and Robin.
That's also nice work if you can get it. She's had an amazing film career.
She was also in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. From Terry Gilliam of Monty Python.
I'm just realizing I'm upset that Uma Thurman doesn't have an Oscar. I realize that, like, she has been nominated for basically working with Quentin Tarantino, but she doesn't have, like, that's so weird to me.
Well, and then she was also in a movie called Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. It's by Gus Van Sant and novel by Tim Robbins. She's really big thumbs, and she hitchhikes.
Really big thumbs?
Really big.
Oh, I bet she can get all the cars to pull over with those thumbs.
And the whole reason why, you know, folks in the queer community, more lesbian, I'll say specific community, love that movie is because Katie Lang.
It must be hard to button a shirt being all thumb.
Katie Lang was the music. So I remember loving that, mainly because of her.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that's another, you know, cool movie to check out. Pulp Fiction is another one that she was really great in.
Yeah. It's like that's what she was nominated for an Oscar. I honestly think she probably deserves more than just that.
Yeah, totally.
Looking back at Kill Bill... She probably deserved. She makes that film work. Like, and it's a really well-made film. I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying that, like, she is the unifying factor that just makes it go.
Well, cuz the original, like, Ula, like, really didn't go anywhere. I'm sorry. Like,
Uma is Lula.
Lee Meredith. I don't remember her.
I mean, I do, but I remember because we watched the movie, so
we remember her from the movie. But I can't name offhand another movie that she's been in.
Well, she's from a different generation, to be fair, but...
To be fair, I know a lot of people from yesteryear, and she's not one that rolls off my tongue.
I mean, I get it. Like, and it's really funny to think about, because, like, Mel Brooks does a really good job of, like, picking, like, good female characters to fill roles. And, not to say anything, like, Madeline Kahn, you know, whatever. Yeah. But it's just interesting, obviously, Anne Bancroft. It's just really interesting, like, because, like, Uma, like, she made that role.
She made that role work for her. Like, that was phenomenal. Like, I did not know she could sing, I'll be honest. I was like, oh, man, is this going to be another one of those, like, Les Miserables, you should not have let certain people sing kind of moments? Or Pierce Brosnan in Mamma Mia. She knocked it out of the park. And I was so surprised in such a good way.
I think my tongue got tied earlier and I said Lula instead of Ula.
Ula dance?
Yes, ooh la la. Remember when Ula dance? Ula dance again.
Oh, she got hit by...
She got hit by a bus too?
She got hit by a car. It was during
like Kill Bill?
Yeah, Kill Bill car crash. Unfortunately, she is a victim of Harvey Weinpig.
He had a lot of victims.
But she is a strong democratic supporter.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And for human rights.
She's a strong woman in general.
She also participated at Human Rights Campaign for the LGBT rights, saying, "We're fighting for a conservative value, the right to make a lifelong commitment to someone you love." She also joined the Rhino Rescue Project and traveled to Southern Africa to assist and help relocating the threatened species of black rhinoceroses.
She's out there doing the things. You know, I can't be too mad at her for doing more films, because she's constantly busy and she puts out good work when she shows up. So,
and she puts her money where her mouth is. Like, this is like amazing. And she spoke up against Roy Moore as well in Alabama. Right, like, it's one thing to be a celebrity, and if you can act, great, wonderful, you are amazing. But if you are someone who has, like, worthwhile causes that are not the safe
and easy,
to put your money where your mouth is for the non-safe causes are really awesome.
It really is, definitely.
And that's, to me, what makes you more important as an actual celebrity.
Agreed.
And then we move on to Will Ferrell.
Yeah. just like I feel like Dustin Hoffman would have done an amazing role, I feel like Will Ferrell does an incredible role with it, because Will Ferrell is just as serious about acting as Dustin Hoffman, but he's a comedian. Let's get things here, because, like, you can't Mufasa, right? Is that how you say it? Zoolander?
I've seen it.
What?
It's a movie I've seen.
Never mind.
I'm sorry. There are certain movies I just don't get. I'm sorry, and that's one of them.
Really? Okay. Well, you know, it's a terrific film. The scene where they're like having a gasoline fight, mm-hmm. and he walks away and they accidentally light a fire with their smoking and having a gasoline fight at a gas station. It's pretty, you don't need much imagination, I would hope. But it's a hilarious film. It really is. I think. I don't know. Some people are like, ah, stupid humor.
No, I mean, I can. I mean, I'm a fan of some of his work. I do like the stuff that he's done on SNL.
Elf.
Elf was pretty good. I'm not someone who wants to watch it every single
Christmas.
No, Christmas. No. Is not that kind of movie for me, but it is still a good movie.
Step Brothers.
I mean, it is, you know.
Did you see Step Brothers?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. That's great. That's pretty funny. I laughed through that whole film.
I did see Blades of Glory.
Yeah, of course. That's a great film.
I saw Lego Movie multiple times. That was really good.
It's pretty funny in Lego Movie, too.
Megamind. I saw Megamind.
Yes, he does an incredible job lending the voice to Megamind.
I did see Anchorman, Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Yes, his terrific mahogany.
You know, so I mean, I am a fan. He has done some good stuff. And I'm sure he smelled better than the original Franz Lipkin because he apparently did not shower.
Oh, that's too bad. But it was the 60s.
No, this was like really intense method acting. He used to sleep in his costume.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, yes, that'll do it too.
He admits how crazy he was.
But to be fair, intense method acting was also the 60s.
That is true. But yeah, I mean, Will Ferrell does a great W impression from SNL, and Robert Goulet, and inside the actor's studio, James Lipton.
Yeah.
Those are ones that like stick out.
Yeah, but like him and his like when he's doing his little crazy eye thing, it's so good for. He just is so much fun to watch on stage and in screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, we are not done talking about the producers. This is going to be another three-part episode series.
Ooh, Kevin has finally been turned to the three-part dark side.
Oh, yeah. There's so much more to the story.
Yeah, no, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. And just the idea of, like, how, like, something like this works. But, like, you know, honestly, when I was going to film school, one of the things we talked about specifically and, like, why, like, when, like, why the producers, like, when I saw that, because, like, the producers wasn't the first Mel Brooks film I saw. I saw that after I understood that, like, the producers was possible. That's kind of how we have things set up in this country. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and just how, you know, basically white supremacy plays in all of that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and we have references as well for those of you that listened to this or watched this and was like, wait, what? Why? Why are they talking about this? What's the connection?
What could possibly be the connection? There's always a connection, folks.
We will talk more about all of that.
Yes, in our next podcast.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you as well.
You can always go and visit our Patreon if you want to help expand and improve on the quality of our podcast. We do use our money to go into that. So it's like, we'll upgrade just like in the Sims. Like, you know, every time you upgrade the home and the Sims get happier and they do better work and it's great.
Patreon.com/StonewallTheMusical. We will see you back next time with part two of the podcast
Talking Musical History
with the producers. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Chris.
It's history. It's history. Very dark history. It's history. Our history. Very, 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 very dark history.
We spend our whole life learning our history and stuff.
It's history.
Finding the truth abounding with mensches and schmucks.
It's history. Research is our true desire. Go down the rabbit hole. Give knowledge to inspire.
discussing comic gold. Learn about facts on our podcast. Sharing history is our goal. Have a few laughs with our podcast. Infotainment for your soul. Skip to the past on our podcast. Talking about the rabbit hole. Musical history podcast. Knowing the truth will make you whole.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.